So look, if you want to grow your wealth, your income, and increase the amount of time off, then these are the shortcuts that can help. Welcome to the Wealth Creation Podcast.
Welcome to Pocket Cash Flow Show. My name is Dan Latto. Hope you're well today. And in this episode, in this show, we're going to talk to you about why buy-to-let is still a great investment. So, welcome. I hope you're well today. Today's Wednesday. It's the 18th of December. We've got a whole week to go before Christmas. Everything's feeling a bit more Christmassy. We fly on Sunday, I think, into the UK, and we're in the UK for about a week. And it's quite nice. We're staying in a hotel. We don't have a house anymore in the UK because we don't need one. But we're flying, we're staying in a hotel, we go down to London, we do all the touristy things, and then we fly back, and it's really nice. And one of the reasons it's really nice is I don't have to worry about when I'm going to go into work and what I'm going to be doing and when I get back next year, when am I going to get back? And I just don't have to worry about any of that stuff because I'm a property investor. That said, I have to worry about other stuff over Christmas, you know, normal stuff like boilers not working, washing machines breaking down. I've had a couple of them recently and all sorts of things like that. And people like, you know, when I leave work at 5 o'clock, on Friday for Christmas, that's it. And I come back in January, I don't have to think about work. That's it for me. And I get that. I get why people might enjoy that as a way of living. You know, you finish work at 5, you go back in Monday at 9, maybe next decade, because it's a whole decade away. You're going to work at 9 and that's it. And you work for the whole week and then you finish on Friday again. And that's fine. As long as you don't mind doing that for the rest of your goddamn life. That's perfect. If you love that and you love your job, that's awesome. But let me tell you something about that. Your job isn't going to stay the same for the next 20, 30 years. If you think it is, you are mistaken in some way. You know, we're heading towards a singularity where we've got this technological singularity. And obviously, all the quantum physicists are a bit annoyed because singularities refer to black holes. But we've got this singularity where we're going to reach a point where technology is going to get so advanced in the next 20 or 30 years. But the way in which we fundamentally live is going to be different. We're not going to have cars in 20 or 30 years. Like, we'll have them, but they'll all be self-driving autonomous cars. And this is not a, in the future, we'll have self-driving cars. It's not that. We're so close to the singularity now, but this is just something that's going to happen. And so, you know, let's talk about universal basic income, for example. What are people who have got jobs? Like Deliveroo, if you're a Deliveroo cyclist, what are you going to do in 10 years' time? There aren't going to be any Deliveroo cyclists in 10 years' time. The pizza robot will cook the pizza and put it in the box, and the delivery robot will deliver it to your house by drone, and we'll have little drone landing pads, and your robot will go collect it from the rooftop and bring it to you. And you won't have a dog anymore because your drone will be a dog. And if you haven't got a dog, it will be a robot. Or your drone will take the dog for a walk. I mean, we're literally 20, 30 years away from all this stuff going on. So we're really close to this. And this is going to cause a problem for quite a few people because it's like this. If you don't get up and go to work, you don't get paid. And I think that's a problem for a lot of people. They of relying on a job that's not going to exist. And I've had a lot of conversations with Uber drivers, and they're like, oh, no, this is fine. And I'm like, dude, you're going to be unemployed. Not only are you going to be unemployed, even worse than that, you're going to be unemployable because all you've got is an ability to drive. You know, it's crazy. In 3 or 4 years, when I get my Tesla Cybertruck, whatever that happens to be, you know, am I going to upgrade to the self-driving option? Hell yeah. And we already know right now that self-driving trucks have a lower death rate than self-driving vehicles, have a lower death rate than driving vehicles driven by idiots like you and me, right? Like, if you look at how many miles they've driven and then look at how many deaths per million miles, it's a lower rate for self-driving cars and automatons and that kind of thing. Do they make mistakes? Of course they do. But do we make mistakes? Hell yeah. So this stuff is going to happen. So the problem isn't that, this is just pie in the sky stuff. It's not going to happen. This stuff is going to happen. And even if it doesn't happen, you want to be prepared just in case it does happen. I saw an awesome quote yesterday. I put it in the Facebook group, and it was, an old Chinese quote, I think it was. And it was, why do we practice for battle when I want to be a gardener? And, the guru turns around and he says, because it's better to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a battle. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's just mind-blowingly accurate for what we're doing. It's better to have all this stuff in place. And if this stuff never happens, all this automation stuff never happens, at least we've got our own method of universal basic income, i.e. property. And, you know, there's lots of stuff coming through, like serviced accommodation, rent-to-rent, lease options, all this stuff, all bandies around the fact that it's basically buy-to-let in a different disguise. And the only reason why people are doing rent-to-rent and lease options and converting it into serviced accommodation is because they can't afford to buy the damn stuff in the first place. They've not got 20, 25% deposits, plus all the stamp duty. And if you're an overseas buyer, even more stamp duty, but it looks like that's going to happen. So now, you know, that might affect me as well. So you've got all this stuff going on, but most people can't do that because we've not got the pure money to do it. Now, as we progress into next year, I've already ramped up my cash flow forecast for the next 30 years. My cash flow forecast takes me up to the age of 77. And I know by the age of 77 how many more properties I'm going to purchase. It is, by the way, a ridiculous amount. And it is a completely made-up figure. If I keep buying, it's going to be 8,251 properties, which, let's face it, is a completely made-up figure. But it's made up on if I buy X number of properties next year, then I'll have X number of income. And if I add that income on to the cash flow forecast each month and each year, then that allows me to buy a few more properties. If I add that income, it allows me to buy a few more. Now, there's some, like, it just goes ridiculous. You know, year 30, we're buying just a ridiculous amount of properties, okay? But that's not the point. That's not even relevant. Is the modelling buy to let, is that sustainable? Well, what do you think? In the UK, we're not building any more land. Those arguments are still valid 20 years on from when I started buying, which is why I started buying. What about immigration? Well, immigration is going to cut back down because now we're leaving the EU. Really? Immigration's up from people who are not based in the EU. We still need people to come into this country to do the jobs that normal people who are born in the UK don't want to do. For whatever reason, whatever those political reasons are, we still need people coming into the country. And, of course, those people who are pro-Brexit, well, you're going to suffer on several points here. You're going to suffer because, one, those people who are not white are coming into our country, and I'm grateful for those people coming in. Just because they're not, that's fine. Two, I would suggest you're probably lower economic status, and you're going to struggle. You're going to struggle unless you're starting to invest. You're going to struggle because those jobs, one, have either been taken by other people coming into the country. Two, they're going to get taken by not Johnny Foreigner, Johnny Robot. Your job in the steel industry is kaput. It is finished within the next 20, 25, 30 years. Guaranteed. If you're a Deliveroo driver, your job is gone. You're a taxi driver, a lorry driver, it's gone, it's out of there. Have you seen the Tesla truck? $180,000 will get you a truck, full automation. And when it gets to its destination, the other robots come out, lift all the pallets off, and the truck keeps on going. And it can drive for 24 hours without having to need a break other than to be recharged. Like, if you're a truck driver, you're screwed. You're going to have to change the way in which we think. Buy to let is here to stay. There's absolutely no question about that. And in fact, what's going to happen more so is that HMOs, although the government have tried to cut back on HMOs, they're going to hang around for a long, long time too. Are you going to invest in HMOs? I personally not, because I love the idea of buy-to-let, single units. But actually, we're probably looking at buying, or actually building to rent, where we're building a unit, it's got 20 flats in it, and we're not selling that, we're not refinancing it. We're going to keep the damn thing, and we're going to rent out to 20 people at a time. Is that possible? Absolutely. The build-to-rent thing is going to be huge in the days to come, the years to come, the decades to come. Massive. And if you're still fiddling around with rent-to-rent and lease options, I get why you do it. I understand why you do it, to generate some short-term cash, but it's not your asset. And that's not to say, by the way, the properties I own that are mortgaged, they're not my assets either. I simply control them for this time being, okay? Let's get like down to the nitty-gritty here. The mortgage company still owns those, and if they decide to take them all off me, I'm up the creek without a paddle. That's also not to say that once those mortgages are paid off and I own them, that I own them. Oh, that's not the way it works. You try not paying council tax on a property that you own, let's say HMO, but you're liable for council tax on. See how long you own that property for, because it's not long. It's less than 2 years, let's say, because the council will enforce a sale so that you can pay all the bailiff's fees and all the rest of it. You never, ever own property. You never, ever own it. You're just looking after it for the next generations to come. It might be your generation. It might be your kids and grandkids and great-grandkids who are looking after it. But as soon as they stop paying the taxes on that property, it's not their property anymore. So let's not, beat about the bush on this. So let's just go bring it back to buy-to-let. Why would you buy a buy-to-let? Certainty of cash flow, for sure. Can you get people who don't pay rent, don't move out, damage it, change it into a cannabis factory? Hell yeah. I've had one cannabis factory so far. We've had a lot of damages on property. We've had kitchens ripped out. We've had tenants that don't pay and don't leave. They're fine. There's not a problem. 2 months, Section 8, go to court, another 3 or 4 months, they're out. Another 2 months after that, they're definitely out. And then we're chasing after them for the next 6 years through bailiffs. And what we normally do is wait 5.5 years and then sneak up behind them in 5.5 years and bailiff them then. And when they've forgotten about it and it's all, their lives have moved on, that's how we do it. But single lets for me work perfectly. Will we buy some HMOs? Maybe. But that's not our focus. Our focus is on single lets, family units, maybe 20 units in a block. That's going to be there for the next 50 years without shadow of a doubt. And let's talk about that. 50 years, I'll be 97. How old do you think I'm going to be when I die? Hopefully we can afford the best healthcare. And if you think there's going to be a technological breakthrough, the singularity, as we call it, there's going to be a medical singularity as well. We're going to have nano robots in the next 50 years going around eating up the cancer and just fixing you, and you'll be fine. This stuff is happening, folks. And I know we've been saying this stuff for the last 50 years. But we are heading towards a singularity, and it's going to happen at some point. I hope it happens before I die and I get to live longer, because I think the average age is going to be 120 for those that can afford it. Those that can't, you're going to have to use the NHS. We know what's happening to the NHS, despite what Boris Johnson says. We know what's happening with that. We know it's going to get sold off in some way. It will be free at the time that you need it, but your taxes are going to have to go up to pay for the more expensive drugs, because the Americans want to make more money on it. And I understand all that. But this is why you want to be starting buying assets right now. I mean, I was looking at this morning at our cash flow forecast on the digital content business. And I'm looking at this and I'm like, do I put this profit here? Is this going to go into FTSE 100 and into like Vanguard? 0.6% is the management fees on that. Is that where that's going? Or actually, is that, let's say, $5,000 of that? Is that going to go into Grant Cardone's and let's just chuck some at that? Or is some of it actually going to buying a house at 20, spending 10 on it, doing the thing up and selling it like 20 grand down, 10 grand to refurb and making 10 or 20,000 pound profit? Like, we've got all these different options for us to start investing in. And this is the thing. When you pay down your debt and your income goes up, you start generating this cash flow in the middle, which allows you to start buying properties, allows you to start buying cash flow. I was looking at, if you take a random figure, it was, so it's 1,600 quid will pay on a 6% yield, I think it was £96. Like, you can't live on £96 a year. But £96 is, what, about £8 a month? And then you're like, okay, what can that pay for? So let's say we have a subscription for 50 quid for Adobe, which we have. How much of an investment do I need? Like, we could invest money in Adobe. I don't know what the yield is on Adobe. Should we have a look at that? Because I love these type of things. Adobe dividend yields. Let's have a look. See how much Adobe we need. So we buy stocks in Adobe via the company. It's a 0% yield, actually. Usually on tech companies, by the way, they have zero yields because they put all the money back into it. And so actually, let's have a look. Adobe share price. It's not a great example. But I love the idea of buying shares that generate cash flow. It could be quarterly, it could be biannual, or it could be annual cash flow. But I love the idea of cash flow, buying stocks and shares. It cash flows, and that actually pays for the stuff. So it actually ends up not costing us anything. The company's generating its own profits just because of its investment. So actually, 2018, what, $175? And today is $322. So it's doubled, almost. It's doubled in the last 2 years, depending when you do it. Start of 2018 was $175. Start of 2016 was $87. So it's quadrupled in just 3 years. you know, if you buy $1,000 of that, it's now worth $4,000. I love that as an idea, but I prefer the idea of having dividends that actually pay for all our outgoings. And so, you know, basically with dividends, that will do that, but it's just a 6% yield. But if I can get a 9% yield on property that then also goes up and I've got more control over it, that for me is more attractive for me. That's not to say we're not buying into yields from stocks and shares, because that's very valuable in terms of having a wide range of investments, and depending where those investments are going to go, it's very, very important that we do that. But you need to be looking at this type of stuff. You need to be having different types of conversation. I remember having an ISA and I put like £100 a month away. I was like 20, maybe 23, 22, something like that, 24. And I had it for about 18 months and it got up to like £2,500, you know, because the share prices were going up and the dividends were being reinforced. And I think I probably closed that and I bought a property with the deposit. Could have even been my first house, actually. So I was like 26 when I bought my first house. That would have been a nice little fairy tale story, but I can't remember if that's true or not. But it would be nice, wouldn't it? But I never then went back into having ISAs. And if you think about, you know, if I'd have put £100 a month away at age 18, all the way up to now, there'd be over £1 million in that ISA. That's, you know, we'd either use that to pay down debt or we'd buy £1 million worth of property, but we'd pay us 6 to 9% yield. I mean, that's just crazy. You're talking, what are you talking, 60 grand a year? On a 6% yield, like, can you live on 60 grand? I would imagine so, quite nicely. It's £5,000 a month. Yeah, very nicely. I was reading Ollie Murs only pays himself, he's worth like 12 million, but he only pays himself £1,000 a week only, you know. But he's making a lot of money. But he does that so that he's normal, like all his mates. He's got a mate who's a plasterer, his mate is a teacher at a college. And I like that concept. But the idea here is that it doesn't matter what the vehicle is. It could be property. It could be stocks and shares. It could be owning a business. But owning a business is different than having shares in a business, because now you're having to go into the business. And I don't want that for you. Like, I want you to have £1 million in stocks and shares or £1 million in property that just pays you every single month till the day that you die, and it's wrapped in some tax-free wrapper or tax-efficient wrapper. It gets, when I say tax-free wrapper, I don't mean 50 cent, if you get that joke. I mean, it's wrapped up in some way and you can pass it on to your kids and your great grandkids, but you never have to work about money. I mean, I woke up yesterday morning and I was like, I was really bored yesterday, by the way. I wasn't in the best of moods for some reason. I was just not in a good place. I don't know what it was. But I woke up and I was like, oh, I was just bored. Basically, I was bored shitless. One is countdown to Christmas. Nothing's happening. It's too cold outside. I got basketball Friday, which I'm looking forward to. But I was just bored, you know. And I was like, maybe I'd get a job. And then I got really excited about having all the businesses that we've got and then having a job that pays a couple of grand and then where all that money can go into this. And it's just a crazy idea, but I like toying with the concepts of, you know, if we earn an extra £2,000 or £3,000 a month, it's 30, 40 grand a year there. What are we going to use that for? How many extra properties and how quickly would that accelerate our growth? And I love looking at that. And the reason why we can look at that is because we've got the cash flow forecasts on the spreadsheet. And again, most people haven't got these and they can't do these what if scenarios. I was looking at them again this morning on what if scenarios, because I'm constantly fiddling with the spreadsheet to see where can we pull some extra cash out? Where can we pay down a mortgage or something else? We don't really have other debt other than mortgage debt, but what can we do to generate more income, either paying it down or increasing our income? And then where can we move that to generate a cash flow so I never have to work again? These are the conversations that I'm having with myself on a daily basis and with clients on a daily basis, because all they can think about is work or their business. And when things are going really good, you think everything's amazing, it will last forever. And I can tell you that's not the way it goes. When things are going really good, you've got to protect all that money and you've got to put it into stocks and shares or property and start generating some cash flow from investments, generating cash flow from something that you're not involved with in some way. That is true passive income. That's where we need you. Like, we need you with £1 million worth of assets. It sounds like an awful lot. And it doesn't have to be property. It can be whatever it needs to be. It can be deposits on £1 million worth of property, but the numbers have to work and cover your cash flow. That's where I want you to be. And that's why we continue to have these type of questions, because these type of questions are the questions when you start moving on. You're not talking about Big Brother and Caroline Flack and whatever's going on there with Love Island, whatever Love Island is, I have no idea. We want you having these next level conversations, which are about, and you may have seen the meme where the woman's in bed and she's going, oh, maybe he's thinking about other women. And he's laying in bed going, if I buy $1,000 of Coca-Cola on a 6% yield, or if I can get up to 100,000, I never have to work. You know, that's the level of conversation that we want, where you eat, sleep and drink yields, dividends, return on investments, return on cash invested, return on time invested. All of this stuff is where you should be having these level of conversations. And what happens, and this is why most people need a coach, is most people are having a conversation down here. I want you having a conversation up here. I want you having these top level conversations of, okay, now I've covered all my costs and I've got a little bit spare. What am I going to do with that little bit spare so it generates more money, so eventually it will be paying all these low-level costs? And then the conversation goes into something entirely different. I mean, think about this. You know, my first house was £42,500. I bought it with a 5% deposit on a gifted deposit. Didn't have a clue what I was doing at the time. My financial advisor suggested it 20 years ago, and that's how we did it. So I bought it with no money down. My very first house was a no money down deal 20 years ago. Not a bloody clue what was going on. And when I look at the return on that investment, okay, so the investment was nothing because I didn't put a deposit down. There was some closing costs and that kind of thing. But when I look at that first house and what the return on investment is, the return on investment is infinite. Because here we are 20 years on, and we're generating £800 a month profit on that one house, okay? After all our costs, it's a HMO now. And I still got it, but after all those costs, we're making £800 a month. But that £800 a month is what, 9,600 a year? Times that by the next 10 years, let's say, that's 100 grand. How many properties can we get on 100 grand with £13,000 down? Let's just do the numbers on that. Divide by 13 is 7.5, call it 7 properties. So that now going to buy another 7 properties. And the cash flow from them is now generating more money. And so we put that into more properties and the cash flow from those properties. So this is why it's an infinite amount of return. And this is why people who go, you know, I did buy to let, but I hated it. I did it for 2 years and I had bad tenants and ripped out all the kitchen. I had a cannabis farm and I put pizza boxes on the wall and all this stuff. Hated it. It's like, dude, you're letting the lowest common denominator, the worst person on the planet, a scum of the earth tenant, okay, because they do exist and we are out there, decide an infinite return on investment on your properties. That doesn't make any sense. Get through it. The problem isn't one. The problem is only one. You need to have 100 properties. I mean, when that happens on one, it doesn't matter because you've got cash flow coming in from all these others. This is why you need to be in buy-to-let or in dividends or in some type of investing. It doesn't matter. But don't let these low-level decisions from idiots basically then describe your entire future, financial future, because it's ridiculous as a thing to do. You want to be generating more cash, and you put the cash into more properties. That in turn generates more cash, which goes into more properties. And then by the age 47, although we got there way before it, by the age 47, you're financially free, you can live by the beach. That's what you want to be able to do. And you want to get to a point where you get bored and you go, do you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to go to the States for 2 weeks. Because why not? Why not do that? We're in London in January, and I'm like to the wife, I'm just letting you know I'm away for 3 or 4 days. There's an event I want to go to. We'll just go pick up and go do it. It makes no difference. I don't have to sign time off work. I just put it into my cash flow forecast because it's forecasted and there's a budget for continuous learning and education. And if you haven't got one, you should have one. But only once you've paid down your budgets on your credit cards, you know, that's the focus. Pay all that stuff down. And then you can have a budget for, you know, self-development. And if that's £12,000 a year, great. You save £1,000 a month. You go on 2 big level events for that in America. You could do a Frank Kern event or a Russell Brunson event or a whoever event, and you can continue on that. And you've allocated the budget. And then the cash flow, the return on cash flow from doing those events, put a proportion of that should go onto it. So you might want to increase that budget to £1,500 or £2,000. And you go on an event every quarter. You certainly need an event a year, like a big high level event, a 2-3 day event. You've got to be doing that because you've got to be getting these regular top-ups, these energizing top-ups, and meet other people who are doing very well and have even higher level conversations like we talked about before. That's exactly what you want to be doing. Okay, so basically that's a different way of buy-to-letting. You know, no one's going to talk to you about buy-to-letting in such a way. Everyone's talking about yields and return on investment and stupid numbers, and that's fine. You need all that, but you've got to start having these top-level conversations, because if not, you're going to get screwed over. Because when a technological singularity hits and everyone's got all this free time and everyone's living at home and nobody has a bloody job because all the robots are doing it, what the hell is going to happen? But people still have to live somewhere, even if it's, you know, in Japan, they've got those little round modules. Part of me is like, let's buy 20 of them and have 20 little round modules for homeless people to sleep in, and it gets disinfected or cleaned the next day, and we stick them under Leeds Bridge next to the train station. Like, how about that? How much would that cost? And we plug it in, and they can recharge the phones. There's a security guard sat there, so everyone's safe. Like, you know what I mean? Everyone's going to need housing of some kind, and the population is definitely not getting smaller. I cannot see the population of the UK getting smaller, and there's already a housing shortage. So imagine that. The population's only going to get bigger. Regardless of what happens with Brexit, there's still people coming into this country, and the birth rate is higher than the death rate. That's just the way it goes, folks. That's where you need to be, and that's why you need to start having these higher level conversations. Anyway, I went way over what I thought would go over there, but I hope that's useful for you, and we will speak to you on Friday when it is the Mindset and Hustle show. Until then, we'll speak to you on Friday. Have a good week. Take care.
Hey, it's Dan here. Thank you for listening. Really appreciate each and every one of you. Please click like or subscribe to the entire podcast.